Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This month, we've shared conversations about respectful communication, the UK State of the Nation report into lost boys, and how to develop family culture to set a solid foundation as a legacy to leave generations. All those topics really made me start thinking about how modern life has created generations of digitally connected but socially isolated and often lonely people, putting pressure on our health and education systems. It's more important than ever for us to reconnect and be present, especially for our children. My guest today grew up on a family farm, free to wander, and be in awe of the world around her. A writer for children, Janine Sanders is a former teacher and passionate advocate for the empowerment of children. Janine, thank you for taking the time to speak with me. Your dedication to empowering children through your educational picture books is admirable. How did your childhood influence your life?
My mother was very unwell mentally as I was growing up. She wasn't really available and my father was busy as a farmer. So I did spend a lot of time alone. I have two older sisters who are quite older and a younger brother who's 6 years younger than me. So I did seem to spend a lot of time entertaining myself with my horses and my dogs, which were super, super important to me. So I do feel that I can kind of, in my writing, understand children who may feel alone at times and who don't really have someone who is there to listen to them and to be on their side. So it wasn't always easy, but it's made me stronger.
Most of us, the only parenting we know is through the modelling. What do you think your parents taught you that made you this way?
I think, you know, when I was younger, you know, I obviously was nurtured and loved and thought of as pretty cute then. But as I grew older and as I got my voice, which is quite a strong voice in there, it was not appreciated. So I guess what they told me was, if you're a good girl, everything will be okay. So I've most definitely, my husband and I, because we very much co-parent, we've always had equal parenting rights in our house. So for our own three daughters, they, you know, they have the right to speak out, they have the right to tell us what they think, and they do, which is great.
I know it's hard to believe, but I was raised that way too, with communication being, you know, a really great tool where we were encouraged to voice our likes, dislikes, you know, opinions, be involved in discussion. And I think it's really important. Why do you think we need to empower the generation now to have that voice again?
Look, I think it comes down to, if we could have a little bit of a look about gender stereotyping. And I think we need to really think about the rights of the child. And I think they are a little, you know, person, even though they're quite small, and we have to respect their voice. Often women in particular and young girls are told to take up their space, be a little bit quieter, not cause any waves, say sorry a lot, which puts them in a position where their voice is quieter and they don't say really what they're thinking, and, you know, putting in boundaries. Whereas I think we accept more that boys can speak out a lot more. So I think particularly our girls need to be taught that they do have a voice and they don't always have to say sorry if they've, you know, beaten someone in a race or if they, you know, are taking up space. So I think we need to actually give them that empowerment. And I feel very strongly about that, actually. I'm actually writing a book currently called Respect Me, Respect My Boundaries, which was a reaction to Donald Trump getting into office. So it is about boundary setting as far as your body goes, but it's also about boundary setting as far as, you know, people speaking over you, or someone just pushing you, or someone taking that toy, and giving children the right to say, hey, that's not okay. You spoke over me and I have something important I need to say, without saying sorry or please or may I, but more like, hey, this is not okay. We need to have a generation who has a voice, because they're going to need it. They're going to need to stand up for themselves in the future. They're not going to be able to be passive. They're going to need to stand up for their rights, particularly around, you know, the climate and their earth. We need to start very young too.
So what age would you say is appropriate to commence giving children a voice for that time or that stage?
Okay, so obviously before children are verbal, it's tricky. But we can, you know, when we're interacting with a nonverbal child, we can tell them what we're doing around their body. We can be saying, look, I'm just putting on your coat now because it's cold outside and you're going to be, you know, you're going to be warmer with the coat on. So you're actually just telling them what you're doing around their body. So then when they start to become verbal, you can then start more like when they're two, like, oh, okay, which coat would you like? Would you like the orange one or the green one? Giving them choice. You know, we do know that you need your coat on because it's cold, but we're giving them choice. And people often say to me, oh, you know, what about if they're running across the road and they say, no, I don't want to hold your hand. Well, I have a good answer for that. And the answer is, as their safe adult, as their person who takes care of them, we say to our child, it is my job to look after you, to be your safe person. And sometimes, like crossing the road, you do need to hold my hand. There might be other times where you can have choice about, you know, what you wear or where we're going or whether you want a hug or a kiss. You can have the choice. So you can start, you know, from a quite a young age, allowing them to speak up and also to speak about their feelings. So I think that's really important. I feel angry right now because of blah, blah, blah. Or I feel really sad and a little bit angry because of blah, blah, blah. And then we can say, okay, like what's going on here? Like, can we talk about this? So have that conversation from young age, from when they start to talk, and it will hold you in good stead as they move through life.
So one of the things I've read about you is that, you know, you are this active advocate for the body safety, gender equality. The thing that stood out was the respectful relationship education, because I think that's where we're seeing a lot of issues in several generations. You're talking about teaching respectful relationships in both homes and schools, but we've got traumatized people in homes. We've got schools that aren't necessarily across trauma-informed approaches. Why should they be responsible for teaching these types of topics?
Well, because there is a lot of trauma. There is a lot of domestic violence. There is a lot of parenting that is a victim of its own parenting. So therefore, you know, they may have had modeling that was really not helpful. And so therefore, as a parent, they may also instigate that. For those particular children who probably are in homes that are quite traumatic, they're going to need to get some messages somewhere else. And they, to be honest, they're going to need to get them from schools. Now, people say to me, but we're so busy at schools. We have, you know, literature to do and we have, you know, maths to do. And I say, great, you do. But if you have a traumatized child, they're not going to learn any of that stuff. So therefore, going back and talking to them about what is respectful in a relationship, what are the skills in listening and understanding other people and listening to other points of view and being open to that and respecting people's boundaries and all of those things, they may not be getting at home. Where are they going to get it? They have to get it from school. So I think governments need to step up. We do have respectful relationships here in Victoria, and I'm sure it's in a number of curriculums, but I really think it has to be just as important, you know, as our maths, our science, our reading. It's just as important. It's all part of social emotional learning. And if we have a generation coming through who are not empathetic, who do not listen to other people's points of view, like what kind of society are we going to have? And the violence against women in particular is only going to increase because there's this lack of empathy. We have this kind of foe in the room, which is the access to the internet. So we can do all the great parenting, we can do all the great teaching, and I hope we do, but we do have this other entity which is taking our children's attention, and it's very nasty, and it's very narcissistic, and it's quite evil at times. So our job has become even harder in the last 10 to 12 years.
It's insidious.
And will continue to become harder.
I'm still perplexed by this particular topic. I do not understand why anyone under 18 would have access to a publishing tool, for one, because they're not legally the right age to be held accountable for things that they're publishing. And of course, the access to information as well as pornography and a whole heap of inappropriate things is all there. So how do you think we should be managing this? And why can't we have devices in schools without being connected to the internet?
Good question. Good question. And I think what we can do in our own homes is keep devices out of the bedroom and out of private spaces, because that's where most of the damage is done, in the bedroom. I would not have my child up to the age of 18 with a device in the bedroom. We can all lock our phones away at night in a lockbox. We could all put them away and, you know, have a conversation around the dinner table. And also, I think schools need to, and I think they're doing this in France at the moment, the kids aren't taking phones to school. There's no phones in the school. So that is kind of all helping. That is, it is definitely helping. And kids are having more conversations and they're playing in the playground. And this is going to be much better. But the horse is kind of already bolted for the previous generations. But we need to do a lot more in that space, because it's not going to go away. I mean, the internet, with all its good and bad aspects, is not going to go away, and nor is AI, for that matter. So we need children to be critical thinkers. They need to think about what they're viewing and what they're seeing. A, they need a safe person when it's really worrying them to go talk to. But B, they need to think, I don't think that's right, or that looks false to me, and like, what kind of message are they sending me? I don't really believe that. We really need them to bring in that critical thinking skills as well in our schools too.
So how do we do that as parents from a young age, foster curiosity and critical thinking, especially around, you know, those topics? Because it sounds like you're talking to me about morals.
Look, I've been thinking about this. My main wheelhouse has been body safety and consent. Now, I will say that I was not abused as a child. I am just a very passionate teacher and parent who thinks we should be protecting children more. But I also think, you know, we talked about respectful relationships, so there comes the gender equality, so I write on that space. So I guess that I have tried to think about this in terms of what I can do as a writer. But as parents, I would just really hope that you put the screens away. I know you're busy. Put the screens away and, you know, go for that walk in the park. Wander around and wonder at things with your child. Have conversations. Think about what something could be or mightn't be, or, oh, I think differently. You think this. And, you know, nurture that with your children. I think it's really important. So I've tried to do it through my own writing because, you know, kids are visual learners, and parents often say, where do I start? So books are a good place to start. So, yeah, I think that the wandering and the wondering is really key.
I still do that.
Yeah, me too. Every day, because I live on, like you were saying, you live on 10 acres. I live on 27 acres too. And, you know, we go back to what we know, don't we? So I brought up on a farm, so I needed to be out of the city. But, yes, I'm like you, just beautiful day, didn't watch the sunrise every morning. And be quite mindful about it, you know, be present.
Oh, every time I see a Ulysses butterfly flash past, and lately they've been in pairs, I'm just like someone seeing something shiny. It's like, Ulysses. And I can't help it. It's this childlike wonder. And I don't think I'll ever lose it. You know, I'm heading towards 60.
No.
But I just love the natural environment and how much it's such a big thing, even universally. And I think awe, when you were talking about it before, lying back on the grass and looking up, it helps you realise, you know, how insignificant we actually are on a universal scale.
Yes, And you know, I've thought about that too. We're very insignificant, but we're very significant too.
Yes.
Like, we feel that we're part of something bigger and we're quite small.
Exactly.
But in our family, like, yeah, you as a grandmother, you are so, and a mother, so significant. Like, and parents are so significant to their children. Like, all children want to do, all they really want is to be safe. To be safe and to be loved. Probably even safe first. So, you know, we all do feel quite small, but we are very significant to our community and to our family.
I think as humans, we all want to feel safe and loved. It's something that doesn't really leave us, you know. So setting children up with those skills or those tools, not only to feel it, but to be able to give it, must be something that's really important. And we talked about, you know, this generation that we've missed. I think there's probably been two. There's a lot of this misogynistic, gender-biased information out there, and people are actually really concerned about a generation of boys. So how do we now give them the voice that they need? Because for me, it's like watching the backlash to feminism.
Yes, yes. And I feel the same because, like, I'm in my mid-60s and I felt feminism so strongly, actually, when I was growing up and going to university. And, you know, the boys were my friends. Now, maybe they were talking about me behind my back, but I don't think so. Like, we were just kind of friends. And I just, this whole misogynist thing happening now is quite alien to me. I mean, my husband and I have always been equal ever since we married, you know, 34 years ago. We brought up our children, as I said, equally. But this misogyny towards women is unbelievable and shocks me, to be honest. I think we've gone back a long way. But I think what we need to do, the work is with the boys. The work is really with the boys. Like, I don't have sons, but I'm sure when they're little boys, they're gorgeous little boys, you know, and they feel and they want to play and they cry and they're happy and they have all the emotions that girls have, obviously. So what happens? What happens to them as they start to grow older? What are they seeing? What are they hearing? What is changing them from these lovely, caring, gorgeous little boys into these men who want to hurt women? Like, what's going wrong here? So I think the work is with the boys to talk to them about feelings, to talk to them about, you know, what they like and what they don't like. And there's some fantastic work by the Man Cave, which they go into schools and they work with boys and they sit in a sharing circle. And I think the empathy is really important too. It's nearly like they've lost empathy, like what it is to be a woman. So, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done there, and it's really scary, to be honest.
I find this perplexing as well, because men are XY, like genetically, chromosomically, let's talk about that. Men are XY, women are XX. So men are naturally having feminine...
Be nurturers.
Well, they've got a feminine gene.
Feminine side.
Exactly.
And they shouldn't be frightened of it. Softness to me is a strength. In my husband and the men I in my life, the softness when they're caring, when they embrace my daughters, this is just a strength. This is just beautiful for me. And, you know, anybody who shows me a really tough sort of masculine side, it's just like, oh, it's frightening for me. I really don't understand it and where it has come from. But obviously, men are feeling a little threatened by women, maybe. I don't know. Like,
I feel like the threat is to accept or embrace the feminine. Because
the feminine side.
Why? Because they've been taught that pink isn't for boys, that men don't do this, that men act like that. You've got to be tough, you know, you can't cry, especially on farms. And it was something I thought you might understand or have seen in rural communities where men have got this, you know, masculine sort of front. And I thought, well, you know, we've just got generations repeating that type of behavior. I see it in my own family. And I think, when are we going to stop it? It's like osmosis. There have been comments, there's throwaway lines you make, there's names you call when children are behaving a certain way, especially boys. That sissy attitude, that only girls do that. Yeah. It's still there, Janine. And it's like, well, what's wrong with that? Why are you assigning a gender to an emotion?
And I always feel like, for example, when someone makes a sexist joke and I say something and they go, oh, yeah, woo, don't say that sexist joke in front of Janine. I become the problem because I've said, hey, I don't like that sexist joke. That's not okay. So everything shifts away from the person who's showing, you know, saying this, talking in a misogynist way, to the problem being put on me as a woman for not being kind of cool about it and having, you know, have a bit of a laugh about it. Interestingly enough, though, my husband is one of three boys, and he was brought up by a very strong woman whose husband died when he was 48. So she had brought up these boys, you know, and they are amazing men. Like, they are just so kind and so caring, and none of this masculine kind of stuff, all 6 foot two or something, but it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And very respectful of her hardworking, putting in all the work, all the study to get, you know, as a single mum, getting them through school, just amazing amount of respect. So if you're a parent of boys, you know, have these really wonderful conversations and also talk to your husband. I think even my feminist husband was really shocked when he saw a program on the ABC called She Made Me Do It. He suddenly goes, okay, this is really tough to be a woman. Like, and, you know, the other night, for example, my 28-year-old daughter came home from the city in Melbourne on a train after dinner at 10:30 at night. And I'm like, no, don't do that. Get an Uber. She said, no, I'll come home on the train. But then she had to get on the phone to me to talk to me the 7 minutes she walked from the station to home. And I still thought, that's not going to keep you safe, talking to me on the phone. But I was up at 11, completely worried about my daughter, who is 28, going from the city on a train to her home.
Yeah.
Now, if you're the parent of sons at 28, do you have those same concerns? And why don't you?
Janine, it's been fabulous talking to you. Thank you so much for your time today. And I look forward to further conversations developing around these topics.
Yes, thanks so much for having me, Kim. It's been a joy.
Children's writer and advocate for the empowerment of children, Janine Sanders, a.k.a. Jay Dale. Janine's published over 130 titles under the imprint Educate to Empower. You'll find all the links to her website and LinkedIn profile in the show notes. If you'd like to join my community of people who care about our future leaders on Facebook, then search for What We Teach Our Children. And to connect with me, go to my website, kimclidon.com. That's KimKleidon. I look forward to sharing another fabulous conversation with you next week. This podcast is recorded in Launchpad Studios thanks to Greater Whitsunday Innovation, formerly Split Spaces.